Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagiribhara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Bala Bhagiribhara Dhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Bihari. So, we'll begin. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we are almost completing the chapter, King Yayati Achieves Liberation. So that's Canto 9, Chapter 19. And the text for today is 27 and 28. 27 is on the board. So we can chant responsibly. Sam Samini Visham Suridam Prapayamiva Gachatam Vignayesh Yeshvara Tantranam Maya Virachitam Prabho Sasani Vasham Suridam Prapayam Iva Gachatam Vignayeshvara Tantranam Maya Virachitam Prabho Sasani Visham Suridam Prapayam Iva Gachatam Vignayeshvara Tantranam Maya Virachitam Prabho. Please chant. Sasani Vasham Suridam Prapayam Iva Gachatam Vignayeshvara Tantranam Maya Virachitam Prabho. Try. Sasani Vasham Suridam Prapayami Vagachatam Vignayeshvara Tantranam Maya virachitam prabho. Good. Sasani vasham suridam. Prapayami vagachitam. Vignayeshvara tantranam. Maya virachitam prabho. I'll chant text 28. Sarvatra sangam utsrijya svapnapam yena bhargavi krishne mana samaveshya vyadhuno lingam atmanaha. We'll do the word for word translation, which will include 28 since the two verses are put together. Sa Devayani, Sanivasham, living in the association, Suridam, our friends and relatives, Prapayam, in a place where water is supplied, Eva, like, Gachatam, of tourists, on a program for going from one place to another. Vignaya, understanding. Ishvara Tantranam, under the influence of the rigid laws of nature. Maya Virachitam, the laws enforced by Maya. The illusory energy, Prabhu, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sarvatra, everywhere in the material world, Sangam, association, Utsrija, giving up, Svapna, Opamyena, by the analogy of a dream, Bhargavi, Devayani, the daughter of Sukracharya, Krishna, unto Lord Krishna, Manaha, complete attention, Samaveshya, fixing, Vyadunat, gave up, Lingam, the gross and subtle bodies, Atmanaha, of the soul. So the translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, Devayani, the daughter of Sukracharya, understood that the materialistic association of husband, friends, and relatives is like the association in a hotel full of tourists. The relationships of society, friendship, and love are created by the mire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exactly as in a dream. By the grace of Krishna, Devayani gave up her imaginary position in the material world, completely fixing her mind upon Krishna. She achieved liberation from the gross and subtle bodies. Purport. One should be convinced that he is a spirit soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Brahman, Krishna, but has somehow or other been entrapped by the material coverings of the gross and subtle bodies, consisting of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. One should know that the association of society, friendship, love, nationalism, religion, and so on are nothing but creations of Maya. One's only business is to become Krishna conscious and render service unto Krishna as extensively as possible for a living being. In this way, one is liberated from material bondage. By the grace of Krishna, Devayani attained this state through the instructions of her husband. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Ramapada Swami Iti Namine Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. This verse is looking at Devayani, the wife of King Yayati, who has come to a point where she's given up her imaginary position in this material world. And why her position, so she's the queen, why her position exists in the imagination is because there is the illusion of relativity. So this is kind of a big phrase. So I'm going to try and look at this more closely. This means that in this reality, there's a close dependence of one value or quality on another. So there's the theory of relativity that we all have heard of, that was developed by Einstein and Lorentz. Usually the second person is not mentioned, but it was the two of them. And in that theory, I'm going to mention two things that they highlight, although there's probably about six main points in the theory of relativity. So these are sort of relevant to what I'm trying to highlight in this particular presentation. one of the particular, findings and presentations in this theory is that there isn't any observable absolute motion. There's only relative motion. And the second thing that they say is that the mass of a body in motion is a function of the energy content, and it also varies with the velocity. So this appears very scientific. I'm bringing this up because generally, even in discussions, like in children's classes, they always bring in physics. So I'm always dealing with mass and velocity. So I think this was on my mind in bringing up this particular thing. But what this means is even the mass of a body is dependent on another value, meaning the value of the energy, the content of energy within the body, and it's also dependent on the velocity. So the mass changes according to the speed of the movement of the body and the amount of energy within the body. So this is very interesting. One thing's mass is stable and one thing, but not so. So there's the theory of relativity that in fact, even a dense mass like the body is dependent on another value. So this is part of this thing that's existing in this world, and even Einstein and Lorentz hit upon it. There's this illusion of relativity. So why illusion? I'll come to it in a minute. And this idea that there's only relative motion versus absolute observable motion is in line with what's just been said. Even motion is relative because it's dependent on other values. It's not absolute. One doesn't merely talk about motion. It's dependent on velocity, mass, etc. So just to highlight this point. now, In this particular world that we're residing in, there's this illusion of relativity, and it takes the form of there being in the material world, the knower, so the person who knows things, and also the who's the living spirit or the superior energy of Lord Krishna, who's different from the known. So also there's that present in the world, this relative idea. There's a separation between the person who's knowing and what's known. And the reason there's this separation is because there's the known isn't of the same energy as the knower. So the knower is composed of superior energy coming from Krishna, but the known, that the knower is coming in contact with, is composed of inferior energy, Krishna's inferior energy. So it means that there's relativity, which takes the form of inferior and superior energy. And so it means that everything's composed of two parts. Now, since the living being is of superior energy, identical with the superior energy that's in the absolute realm. So this is even what Einstein was highlighting. There isn't an absolute motion, but there is an absolute realm. So in the absolute realm, there's superior energy. And the living being is actually composed of superior energy. But in the material world, this living being composed of superior energy is coming in contact with inferior energy. This brings about this illusory factor, some illusion, because that entity composed of superior energy coming into contact with inferior energy, that they can possibly know, causes confusion. The illusion gets created that is known is also what one belongs to. One starts to think one also belongs in that category of the inferior energy. So this is how illusion comes about. So it's very interesting. So that's why this problem in this world of illusion and relativity. Now, here there's this example of thinking of belonging to the inferior energy, and we have Devayani having that problem because she's thinking that, so she's the knower and she's coming into contact with even other entities that belong to the superior energy, meaning her husband, her friends, her relatives. So all human beings are composed of superior energy, or that's what they embody. But she comes to have this understanding that actually that is her reality is actually an association that has this illusory component. And how she describes, and how it's described in this verse, is that the association, because of this illusion that one's carrying, that one belongs to the inferior energy, so everything is seen as being composed of inferior energy, she starts to see that her association with husband, friends, and family is exactly like associating with a whole bunch of tourists in a hotel. So this is very interesting because generally, the kind of companionship you can get from persons that are tourists in a hotel is fairly superficial. In fact, there's very little connection except perhaps for a mutual anxiety about being in a foreign place, or else there's a sort of little thread of a common purpose of going to view some significant art pieces in the most significant museum in that city, let's say. Anyway, I've had this experience, not necessarily with a whole bunch of tourists, but even with one or two other tourists. So the thing that one connects one is indeed, like I was in Madrid once and once in London, and a similar thing, you know, the persons I had to meet up with, the common purpose, like in Madrid, it was to go to the Prado Museum so that one could actually see Picasso's Guernica. And in London, it was a case of meeting up in order to go to the Tate Gallery and I see various impressionistic paintings. So, you know, it's a very thin, fine thread of something in common. So there's a force of illusion that's operating because, of course, there's the material, the learned conditioning, so this kind of predisposition to what one is going to connect with in another human being. And there's also this development that happens, this attachment for transient material things, and even for transient bodies, for that matter. And in her case, it was for her husband, King Yayati, in particular. I had this experience of this attachment to transient material things because that's like my connection with my brother. He deals in art, so and the common attachment point is art. So whether we meet up in a foreign city or whether we have a conversation, it's always in connection with some art. So this is that kind of attachment to transient material things. And now Srila Prabhupada puts it that persons actually get harassed by their material creations. So I was thinking about this, and the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, the magnificent World Trade Center that used to exist in Manhattan, because I lived many years in Manhattan. One would look down a particular street, and then way in the distance, one would see the World Trade Center. The buildings were so tall and so linear that they always were a kind of focal point. Even if one was way uptown looking downtown, one would see the World Trade Center, or provided it wasn't Park Avenue, because that had some big obstructions, other buildings. But anyway, this point that one's material creation actually harasses one, that World Trade Center at some point some bomb was detonated in one building from a truck, or was released, and then some aeroplane hit the top of the, some terrorists got an aeroplane to hit the top of that very tall World Trade Center. And the result was that the way that the building had been built was that it actually caved in on itself, just the way it was designed. And so this was a problem, because on every floor there were so many thousands of people. So then all these images that were subsequently done of persons being, you know, way on some very high, high floor, jumping from a window, because basically everything else was being engulfed by flames on the interior, just the way the building was designed. So anyway, that came to my mind as soon as I was reading Srila Prabhupada saying that even the material creations that one does actually harass one. So now, there's an attachment that's taking place in this interaction with the inferior energy, and according to the particular learned patterns that one's developing just by associating. And it's all taking place in what's referred to as the darkest region of Krishna's creation. So that's how this world is referred to, as the darkest region. And it's not really possible to escape from this materialistic, dualistic world simply by desiring to do so. It's not possible. And Srila Prabhupada points out that, in fact, there's actually very few persons that even want to escape, sadly. Because they haven't actually tired of this material engagement of binding themselves in some way to this promise of happiness by associating with the inferior energy. Now, persons who are materially engrossed, they have relationships that have been created by the Maya of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's stated in this verse. And usually one thinks of what immediately comes to mind is what's often referenced in the Bhagavatam is the lives of householders in this category who are living only for their family members. So either it's the immediate family or their extended family. And because of this very narrow focus, it means that they're actually very envious of others. And in fact, we even heard that Devayani herself had gone through such an envious spirit right in the beginning because she drew a distinction between her position and that of her friend Sarmishta. And I'm going to quote that the statement, the one statement she made that shows something of this enviousness. And we are even more respectable, referring to the Brahmanas, because we are in the dynasty of Bhrigu. But although this woman's father, referring to Sarmishta, being amongst the demons is our disciple, she has put on my dress exactly like a sudra taking charge of Vedic knowledge. So that's kind of an envious position, making this kind of distinction between her position and that of her friend. So this is this kind of problem that happens when one has a very narrow focus, just focused on those that are immediately around one that, one sees as belonging to one's own reality and one's own area of importance. So now, this engrossment is such that different subject matters connected to politics, science, economics, they actually become much more important. So the most important question always gets pushed aside. And that most important question is, and this Srila Prabhupada emphasizes over and over again, is finding a solution to those things in life which cause great unhappiness. So that's not usually a question that's looked at. And it seems the most obvious question that everybody has to go through this gradual diminishment in their the power of their senses, the strength of their body, the onslaught of either external or through lifestyle habits, the breakdown of the body through some disease developing, and then finally that actually one is forced to leave the body. So this particular question is always put aside, and one has this experience if one speaks to any regular persons, the opening statement will be a question about, some significant news item. This is always the case, whether it's, some tragic killing, or whether it's some disastrous turn in economics. I mean, these are very important topics generally, like extremely important. I mean, I have the experience especially if I'm visiting, say, another country, and then persons that I run into, that will be the topic that's brought to me. Of course, it's quite unimportant, but to most people, it's extremely important. So the solution, though, came to Devayani by the grace of Lord Krishna. And Lord Krishna explains this. Mamu Petya Punar Janma Dukalayam Ashashvatam Napuvanti Mahatmanaha Samsidim Paramam Gata. So It's Bhagavad Gita 8:15. He says that attaining me, those great souls do not return to birth in this temporary place of suffering, having attained the highest goal. So this is actually the solution that's really, that question that's been avoided by everybody. This is actually the solution being presented by Lord Krishna. The question that's not asked how to actually go past this huge mass of suffering, the questions that are not really looked at. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he puts it that what one is trying to look for is eternal, continual, certain, and everlasting life. So it must be certain, must be continuous, and it must be everlasting. That's actually what one is looking at. That's actually the the real happiness that one wants to look for. So the birth one takes then, one doesn't want it to any longer be temporary or have this suffering component. One wants the birth to be full of joy because it's eternal. So that's the fundamental thing that one wants to have be one's reality. So the means for attaining this birth is to exclusively think of Krishna, and this is mentioned that Devayani came to this point. Because this exclusive thinking of Krishna allows one to reach the highest perfection. It means that one's consciousness is on a different level. So on this level of consciousness, where one's trying to attain perfection, this perfection of pure devotion to Lord Krishna, so that is one's reality, just one's devotion to him, as opposed to any other distraction of interaction with the inferior energy. Only then can one be situated in one's real life. So this was the problem that we were looking at, you know, moving from this imaginary, illusory relativity to actual reality. So that's the actual reality, being able to constantly think of Krishna and exclusively think of Krishna, particularly exclusively think of him. the course of action, then, taking into account that this is the actual way one can come to a position of reality, is to strive to develop this kind of attachment to Lord Krishna and his devotional service. I was thinking about this a lot, that how long it takes or what distractions there are in developing attachment to the service of Lord Krishna. And it's so interesting when one goes past one's particular attachment of that connection with the inferior energy, one looks back and thinks so many years were actually spent thinking, I have to do this particular activity. Like in my case, I used to like doing photography a great deal, and I never imagined there'd be a time when I could be very detached about it. But that actually happens just by virtue of, you know, the increased attachment for Lord Krishna and his devotional service. So if photography is now done, it's in relation to service. It's no longer a separate thing. now, as opposed to the lifetime of an envious householder, and this is how that lifetime is described, the envious householder. It's passed at night either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime either in making money or maintaining family members. So this is actually can be an entire lifetime made up exclusively of these activities. I mean, it's an extremely narrow focus. And Srila Sukadev Goswami gives this description in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And one also doesn't need to spend time using one's time, and Krishna explains it this way, in any kind of speculative argument, and I've come across quite a lot of people who do this, so it's of relevance to me. there's this argument, the world is real. No, it's not real. So this is constantly examined. It's a big philosophical question. And Krishna puts it that it's actually not necessary to go into this kind of examination, because the reason one's going into that examination is because one doesn't have knowledge of the Supreme Soul. And one is merely trying to understand something of the material duality once again, that relativity factor. And although such argument is useless, this is Krishna talking, persons who have turned their attention away from me, their own true self, are unable to give it up. So it's pretty tragic, not being able to give it up. this is from 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's how Krishna describes this problem that happens with those that do start to even look at the relativity on a philosophical level. so even for a jnani or philosophical speculator, without understanding Lord Krishna's argument of the reality and unreality of the material world, it actually turns out to be quite useless. And the point why it's useless is because the world is real, and it emanates from the supreme reality, Lord Krishna. So if one doesn't have that concept, then one is just looking at the dualities or the relativity part. So there always has to be the connection with the origin, because that's the complete. So then one doesn't have to look at relative if one is connected to the complete. if one doesn't understand the reality of Lord Krishna, one can never definitely ascertain the reality of his creation. This is the problem. one will always wonder if one is actually seeing something or merely thinking that one is seeing something. I mean, these are philosophical concepts. If you read any philosopher, this is the struggle. Is it real? Isn't it real? Does one see or does one not actually see? You know, is it imaginary? So again, it's that confusion connected to looking at the illusion and the relative aspect of the illusion. So difficult. so the resolution to this kind of thinking or conjecture is to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead so that one can advance in spiritual enlightenment and progressively become more satisfied with one's beautiful experience in Krishna consciousness. So it's on, you know, a completely raised level of consciousness, not caught up on that lower level of the relativity. So Devayani, she completely fixed her mind upon Lord Krishna. And she actually achieved this kind of liberation from the subtle body, the mental part, and the gross body. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he describes this change of thinking that happens, just fixing one's mind on Krishna. So as opposed to thinking, so this is the general thinking. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and I think it's so brilliant because you don't think it's possible to analyze in a few sentences the way general thinking is, but here he puts it. Let me be happy. Let everyone else experience some inconvenience or discomfort, but let me be happy at others' expense. So this is the unfortunate thinking. I mean, it's analyzed in a couple of sentences, but it's a whole way of being. I recall when I was growing up, I had a father who was a regular Catholic. So he would say to me, You're an intelligent person. You have to make sure that you surpass everybody else in your class. And I'd so I'd say, oh, but there's somebody very intelligent. There's a friend of mine who's very intelligent. I'm quite happy if she does as well as me. No, you have to surpass everyone. So that's that kind of thinking, you know, let me be happy and, you know, at the expense of everybody else. So, yeah. Anyway, we always had conflict, my father and I, but that's part of the reason. So, so the change is that let us not deceive or dispossess anyone else. And this is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Let us all get together and chant the names of the Lord 24 hours a day. This is his solution. So as opposed to being on the path of fruitive action, or a path of knowledge, or the path even of ordinary dull interest, let one be on the path of pure devotion to Lord Krishna, where nothing is needed except chanting. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And so first one has to hear through one's ears, and then the other senses will act in a favorable way. So it's a means for infiltrating into that illusion that one is carrying. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta goes on to say that one who's taken shelter of devotion, he has to go beyond the highest limit of human intelligence. And it means that one cannot be interested in any concept that's created by a human. So to be influenced by any concept which has come from humankind, so let's say, you know, I brought up right in the early part of the discussion Einstein's theory of relativity. Even to be influenced by that kind of concept in some way, even though it's accurate from the point of view of his touching on that there isn't even absolute motion but relative motion in this world, there's still the problem that one could get all tangled up in mathematical formulations, which, you know, I find generally when I the other day I was discussing the pastime of killing Agasura. So this was a cause of great discussion amongst the children because physics was an important factor. You know, how did you deal with an 8-mile mass sitting in Vrindavan, and why was it that that mass wasn't visible at the present time? So then this led to a whole discussion that moved into the realm of physics. So so Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says that one can't actually get influenced by any concept which comes from humankind or even from the demigods or even from a particular nation. Because then one becomes very shallow and everything goes back to the relative platform. And he defines further that living on a relative level is to indulge in one's own imagination. So this is a very fascinating point. Or even a state of consciousness that is the result of a deteriorated mind. So if one's functioning on the relative level, the mind is deteriorating because one's never actually able to come to any answer. So the mind is actually deteriorating. And he also puts it that this living on a relative level has to do with indulging in one's own imagination. So I thought about this and I thought it's equivalent to like daydreaming. You know, one just lets the mind go and then, you know, this picture gets presented, this possible reality gets presented, that possible reality gets presented. So this is all living on the relative level. One has to rein in everything and also the imagination. So it's important not to be tempted by previous experience. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talking, because that's the imagination moving onto the relative level. A lot of it is connected to previous experience. So one is creating these imaginary pictures based on previous experience. So he actually says it's important not to be tempted by one's previous experience. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta goes on to say, we have to hear, for we are the worshippers of the revealed truth. We have to hear those words which would pierce through our ears, those words which come from the Acharya, so that we go to him with our offering of self-surrender. So this is the solution. One has to break through that tendency to go to the relative plane, and it requires piercing the ears with the words of revealed truth, of course coming from Bhagavatam. And he particularly says even the words of the Acharya, they actually break through that relativity, and it brings about the self-surrender. So one then's willing to surrender oneself. this little section that I've been discussing Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's thoughts, it's excerpts from, there's a book that deals with excerpts from and letters from excerpts from his letters and essays. So anyway, Devayani, she received those words that pierced through from her husband. Even though in her case, those words were presented as a funny joke and through an allegory, but it was coming from King Yayati, who'd come to have understanding of a life beyond this relative plane. So actual life, real life, is spiritual existence, the Brahma Bhuta existence, because in that, on that plane of reality, life is eternal, it's blissful, and it's full of knowledge, as opposed to living a material existence that is that temporary, illusory, whole chunk of suffering involved. And I guess I'm going to close off with the verse that comes from Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. And this is spoken by Srila Suta Goswami. This is the means for getting in contact with the Supreme Lord. And it is a science that's actually open to all living beings, be it the great self-realized kings like King Yayati, the extremely qualified brahmanas, or even all the other categories of persons. And I'll read the Sanskrit for that particular verse, since it's such an amazing verse. Vasudev Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Asu Vayagyam Gyanam Chayat Ahaitukam. So those are some thoughts on this verse, which is going to lead into the next verse, where we'll hear how it was that Devayani's fixing of her mind happened. But I was dealing with just this part of her making that transition. So if there's any thoughts for our discussion.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for class. Really nice. I was thinking, just sharing some thoughts that I had. Like you were speaking really clearly about the illusory energy and like our position in the illusory energy. I was thinking, like, see, the spiritual world, the material world is a exact reflection of the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world, there's also like the elements, like there's earth and water and fire and air and ether. It seems like, maybe this is a misunderstanding, but the elements are there. Like you can see the pictures of, in the descriptions, there's water and fire and air. So But there's even mind and intelligence in the spiritual world. But there's probably, it's just the main difference is the ahankar, like the false identity. It's in the third, I think 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it says that like the banyan tree, it's a upside down banyan tree, and the real tree is in the spiritual world. So everything is there, it's here, but it's a exact reflection. And it's situated on desire, I think it says something like that. So something like differences our desire and our sense of identity, but otherwise it's the exact same, like it appears the exact same. So I was thinking also, like what I'm trying to think more like specifically, what is the illusion? Like, because before I came to Krishna consciousness, I started practicing, I kind of got into this like identity illusion. Like, I mean, I was already in it, of course, but it became really prevalent and extreme when I started like pursuing like my desires. Like, I wanted to become something, so I started like, it's like this whole concept of like manifesting your destiny, and that like that really creates like this ego trip where you start imagining everything around you as like going in your direction, and it's all for you and your destiny, and it's like almost it starts becoming like really scary almost. And that's, I think that's why a lot of people who really pursue like their manifestations and like they become famous or they create some crazy things, oftentimes they end up going crazy because they're in this like huge ego trip and like super like self-centered. So like it seems like the more you pursue or the more you become successful in this like so-called like manifestations, then the more you become like kind of I don't know, the illusion gets exposed more and more the more you pursue it and the more you're successful in like doing something in the material world. Like, that was my experience, and just sharing.
Thank you, Giridhari, for your thoughts. You had the understanding that the same elements and the same composition is present in the spiritual world as in the material world, and this wouldn't be the case because the elements that are existing here are material elements, and anything material has a lifespan. It has a beginning point and an end point. So there's dissolution that goes on. It decays and goes back to earth, so to speak. Whatever element is used to create something, it has to ultimately return to the earth element. So by contrast, in the spiritual world, even though one may be seeing water, one may be seeing trees, or one may be seeing birds or flowers, at least depicted, the composition is different, because everything in the spiritual world is supposed to be made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. So therefore, what one is seeing is a very fine composition. It's like if one can imagine like a thought. So a thought is not something that is composed of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. It's subtle, it's intelligence. But the intelligence, it's a very real, tangible thing, the thought. It occupies space within one's subtle body. In the spiritual world, the desires are manifesting those, the external. So the composition of the external is on the level of the soul. So the composition is knowledge. So even the external, what one is seeing, it's made of knowledge and eternity and bliss. It's a very fine composition. So how that translates into the shape of a tree or the shape of water or the shape of a bird or the shape of a flower. It's the purity manifests in that way. The purity of service to Krishna allows for the manifestation of those things. So it's very different to the composition of things in the material world with the material elements, where there is that deterioration, the constraint of a time span within which everything is existing, and which isn't necessarily in connection with Krishna in terms of how the elements are used. So because it's not in connection with Krishna how the elements are used, it doesn't have anything eternal to it. It's in relative to time. It now exists, it will not exist. Completely different from the spiritual composition of things that appear to be similar to those in the material world. I've tried to explain this as best I can. And then the other part that you brought up, which is very interesting, is where persons are carrying in their subtle body the idea that they are the creators of their reality. So if one thinks about it, the having such a thought is doomed in many ways, because it's nourishing pride, which you brought up. It's also nourishing exactly that limits intelligence, meaning seeing oneself as controlling. If one has that idea that one is controlling, that's intelligence is taken away from one. It's moves to the relative plane, because one's not connecting with Krishna, who's the actual controller. So by not acknowledging Krishna means one's intelligence is very limited. So the possibility of actually creating one's reality is extremely limited. I mean, even more so than if one didn't have that idea that one can control the reality around one and move it in the shape that one wants based on one's desires. Just by virtue of the fact that it's not connected to the actual controller, and having the proper mood of humble acknowledgement of Krishna's kindness in giving one's body, in giving one an ability to think, just not having that kind of mood, one is doomed to fail. Completely doomed to fail. I mean, you just have to spend a few years living in New York City and observe persons passing through, who everybody comes to that city in order to pursue fame and fortune. So when you live in that city, you discover how people's lives shape. So I came across many persons because of the field that I was working in. You find a person who's famous already and wants to become even more famous. And then I even watched one person in that position, juggling something or other that, you know, was the fortune going to be this way or was it going to be this way this day? Because basically everyone is helpless. They actually have no control over their destiny. I mean, there is no control. So it's only with acknowledgement of Lord Krishna and his being the actual controller that then things move onto a real plane and one can see properly and one can understand what it is that needs to be done. And again, it puts one into, it allows that horrible egotistical thought that one is the controller to drop away when one actually gets the proper perspective and one is relieved of so much suffering, and which is what you emphasize, that actually horrible suffering happens, like even madness can come in because it's extreme ignorance. And in fact, one is like being directly defiant in many ways. So, but anyway, it's fantastic to have gone through that kind of growth, because then when one actually does come to find Krishna consciousness, one can be, you know, doubly grateful. So.
Hare Krishna Masaji. I only have a comment, well, a special comment, and you don't have to elaborate on it if you like. It's just a glorification, appreciation of your point you made that I really appreciate also. And you said when people associate with each other in hotels, it's very superficial. And that sometimes that's what our relationships with devotees could be like, very superficial. Hari Bol, you know, bye, and that's it. Or usually criticizing. But one thing I appreciate what Prabhupada said is how we make our relationships deeper in the seventh canto, fifth chapter, verse 12. And that purport, Prabhupada says that one should not be proud of his own service, but should appreciate and glorify the service of others. So on that note, I'd just like to appreciate, you know, a couple people. Today's Rocktop's birthday. And also there's another birthday, another devotee, but Rocktop, I'll keep him short, but the one thing, I appreciate about, I mentioned it before, is that one time he was at a restaurant with his mother, and he had a very, very disrespectful waitress. And naturally, when you have a disrespectful waitress, you're not going to leave him a tip or maybe a penny for more insult. So he decided, and his mother also concurred, that instead of reacting in a normal way, let me make her day. So when she came to give the check, Rocktop Prabhu, he actually grabbed the lady's arm like he was gonna retaliate against her. And he said, the lady was about ready to punch me. So then he put something in her hand before she punched his lights out. When she opened it up, it was a $50 bill, and that made her start weeping, because you never know what people are going through in their lives, you know. And that's the same with devotees. Our devotees, we just don't deal with Krishna consciousness, this etiquette, this bhakti sastra. We all have our threefold miseries in our life. And so be hard on devotees all the time. For me, I feel that it goes back to being superficial, our superficial relationship with devotees. There's another devotee whose birthday today, Bhakti Sunny. And man, I really appreciate Sunny's, we all have our faults, and Rocks, I would say, I have our faults, and so is Sunny. But the one thing I really appreciate about his association is that he's always glorifying devotees. Pretty much every devotee, one, since the devotees are here now, I'll mention a couple of them. Acharya Nishas, he doesn't have a problem with calling devotees Mahabhagavats. Acharya Nishas, just recently, 2 weeks ago, he told me, you know what, Giridhari, you could tell he's elevated, you know, his consciousness, you know, tremendously from before. He was like, you could just tell, it's obvious. That's what he told me. And one other point I'd like to appreciate about Sunny is that for the last year or so, he's had a roommate, and she's a senior citizen. She's basically has some disabilities, and he's basically been our caretaker, you know, for the last year or so. They recently moved, so they departed their destiny. But one thing I appreciate about him is kind of like a, what do I want to say? I'll just tell you it. One situation is that they also acquired another roommate a while ago. This is a story that happened a while ago. And it was an Indian devotee. Not an Indian devotee, just an Indian person who came. And One thing that Sonny said would made him really mad is that he came home one day, and they only have one space heater. And this Indian person, he wasn't a devotee, obviously. He took the space heater from the old lady who has many problems and put it in his own room. And so Sonny was always about ready to kick his butt. So they had to kick him out, you know. So he took this is only one space heater, so he gave it back to her. So it goes back to, anyone could come from a country like Subhas said with culture, but real culture is not simply putting on a show for people when everyone's around, but what are you doing in private? How are you treating others? And that's the one thing I really appreciate about Sonny. And one last person I'd like to appreciate, their birthday was on December 28th. I was made aware of that. Is Ruchi Prabhu, actually. I said Ruchi Prabhu, Ruchi Machaji. The one thing I really appreciate is because the only reason I connected with her, she actually uplifted my consciousness one time. One time I wasn't coming for Bhagavatam for like a couple weeks. And you know, we all go through our ups and downs. And Ruchi came to me and said, I haven't seen you for, you know, a while, you know. I really love your comments in Bhagavatam. So that was a curveball for me because I'm pretty loud. I usually get a lot of flack for talking too long, a lot of criticism. So when somebody appreciates me, I'm very enthused and happy about it. So then after that, she stopped coming for Bhagavatam for a while. And then when she started coming back, only recently, this was like a year and a half ago, she told me this. And so she goes through her difficulties and so I also connected with her, I try to lift her to the best of my ability. But the one thing, profound thing that she said to me that I really appreciate that I try to imbibe is that one thing, she's always self-deprecating herself. In one sense, that's bad, but in another sense, it's good because she's never criticizing devotees. She's always saying, and so the one profound thing she said to me is that she's always saying, God is on their side. Whoever's you know, opposition to her, God is on their side. God is not on my side. And that's the opposition of a normal mentality. We usually say God is on my side and God is not on their side. I'm the good guy and they're the bad guy. She says the complete opposite. So I was like, this is a good mentality to have, and you'll always have Lord Krishna's mercy by maintaining that mentality. So that's a few points I wanted to make is that, you know, we have to keep things in perspective. We could leave our bodies any moment, get in a car accident. So why not appreciate devotees instead of criticizing and finding faults? So that's one last point I'd like to end with. In chapter 50 of Krishna book, the chapter entitled Krishna Erects Dwarka Fort, Prabhupada mentions a very important point. He says demons do not try to find their own faults, or the faults of their friends. They only try to find the faults of their enemies. And that's one thing I keep in mind all the time is that keep things in perspective. You know, everyone has their faults. But to the degree we always find fault with each other, our relationship would be very superficial and shallow if we don't increase our glorification of devotees. Nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nitya bhagavata sevaya. Prabhupada says in his purport that there's two bhagavats, you know, the devotee bhagavat and the bhagavatam. Srimad means the glories of the devotees in the Bhagavatam. So why don't we increase our glories of the devotees instead of increasing our faults of the devotees? So Hare Krishna. All glories to all the devotees in general, the pujaris, everyone. But I specifically mentioned a few devotees today. So thank you for letting me take your time, and Hare Krishna.
My goodness, Jai Baladev, I don't know if I can say anything after that long. Well, yeah. Yeah, actually, one can go even further. One can actually go and pray to the deities for the success of each and every devotee's service that they're performing. That's even better.
Hare Krishna. I just have one question on, I just want to make sure I understand on Giri Dari's point that he made about creating our, about reality. And so, I don't know, I understand it as we don't create our own reality. Krishna allows our reality to unfold. Is that correct? Like, the more we devote ourselves to Krishna?
He wants to respond to Tendriya. Okay.
Enlightenment.
They asked Srila Prabhupada, what is Krishna consciousness? And he said, Krishna consciousness is reality distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all. And instead of becoming the controller, we should become the cooperator. Man is the architect of his own destiny. Krishna consciousness is for those who are materially exhausted. You know, thank you.
Yeah, so Jitendra's very cryptic statement from Srila Prabhupada highlights that point that and I think it was something I was trying to communicate in the class, that actual reality is the reality where there's a connection with Krishna. And that we consider reality, our regular life, where we're not seeing the connection with Krishna, that falls into that category of everything being relative. It's on a relative plane. One thing is dependent on another thing. And then there's an illusion that gets created because it's not in connection with the source of everything. So there has to be that acknowledgement of the source of everything. then one's consciousness is raised, that it goes beyond the relative plane. So in terms of Giridhari's question of whether one is an architect of one's reality, and Jitendra brought it up that Srila Prabhupada said one is an architect of one's reality, if that reality is on the Krishna conscious plane, meaning it's a reality where one's consciousness is connected with Krishna. So one is chanting the holy name, for instance, which is what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said was the most important thing. One's consciousness is on a level that's allowing for Krishna to orchestrate one's life. Because one is attempting to surrender to him, and he plays a reciprocal role of protecting one and shaping situations for one such that one can get closer to him in one's devotion to him. So in that sense, one is the architect of one's reality by one's surrender to Krishna and giving him the space to orchestrate things in such a way that one's reality is moving closer to him. But the other reality that one may attempt to shape and carve out that's on the relative plane is just doomed to failure, because always everything, one thing is dependent on another thing, is dependent on another thing. So one's always caught in some sort of conflict or uncertainty or anxiety, always. And being on the real plane of connection with Krishna, one becomes free from that anxiety. One becomes free from that kind of conflict. One becomes free of that relativity. So one becomes transcendent to those things that hamper a peaceful reality. Best way to put it. Thank you very much for your kind attention. We've gone a little far in time. My apologies. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Thank you.